Hey, everybody, this is Adam Reuter for the Baltimore County Informer podcast, where we give a fair platform to all political candidates, especially for the upcoming 2026 season. Joining me today is Sharonda Huffman. Sharonda, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you are running for Baltimore County Council. What part of Baltimore County?
Well, I live in Essex, and, you know, we're currently under redistricting. So under the current councilmanic district, I'm in District 7. Under the proposed councilmanic district from the redistricting commission, I'm in District 7.
Okay.
So that's East Baltimore County. So I look forward to whenever they finalize it, but I'm running regardless wherever they put me.
All right. Well, first of all, tell the audience a little bit about your background.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I am a 20-plus resident of Essex, Maryland. I'm originally from a little town called Delaware City, Delaware, where I grew up near refineries, nuclear plants. But it told me early on how where we live shapes our opportunities and our health. I've spent my career advocating for working families, disability rights, fair housing, and transparent government. I currently am an ADA, which is the American Disabilities Act 504 legal manager for a housing nonprofit. I was a former union steward. I'm also a Baltimore County planning ambassador. I also am members of the NAACP for both the city and county. I am married for over 30 years, and we have three wonderful children. My oldest is 25, and he's an adult with autism. I have a college student that attends Morgan, and I have a high school student. I went to Morgan State University for my undergraduate, and I have a master's from Strayer University in public administration. That's a little bit about me.
One important topic for me personally is affordable housing. So can you tell me, if you are to become one of the next Baltimore County Council people, what would you do to make housing more affordable?
One thing I failed to mention was my previous career. I was a housing director for Maryland Inclusive Housing. And ironically, I just left Department of Housing and Community Development. I am the housing committee chair for Baltimore County. So in that space, I advocate for persons with disabilities, specifically for housing needs. So that is one of the main reasons that I'm running. I am very fortunate that I work for a entity that's one of the leaders in housing, and I wanted to bring that back to the county. What I would do, first of all, is really is about education. We have this thing where we call it NIMBYism, okay? Not in my backyard. I don't really think people fully understand the complexities of not having affordable housing or attainable housing in our county. Mm-hmm. It affects our economy. We have higher taxes because it's a supply and demand issue. We don't have a growing workforce because people might not want to necessarily work in a county if they can't live near where they work. I just had a meeting with Director Hickey, and we talked about there are households that may have three, four different households in it because housing is so, so expensive. So what would I do? I think we need a better process. The first thing, and that's one of my priorities, is make sure that we have a better process enduring housing. And what that means is we have to have real talk conversations. Nobody really likes change, but I think when you go and look at what happened with my son is 25 years old. He's an adult with autism. There are opportunities for him to have housing through various HUD programs for people with disabilities. There was no housing offered in Baltimore County. He had to move to Abingdon. I want to also preface that I have an extensive background in housing. Professionally, I've been a real estate agent for government at State Highway and also for Baltimore City. I recognize that there has to be a real conversation with our government entities as well as developers on what is smart development. We also have to look at sometimes with affordable housing has to be supplemented. We have to have a better way that we're saving our money for housing projects. I was just at the council meeting last night where they discussed the Red Maple project. Mm-hmm. However, it probably may not go through, but we have to learn how to just be upfront. This is where we're going to have housing. You know, we have to have those community conversations. We have to have buy-in from the community, but sometimes the community is not going to buy in. So we have to look at the overall good for our county and for our state, because the way we're going now, we're not going to be in compliance with the consent agreement with HUD. We have to have 1,000 homes by 2027. We should not be creating homes because we have to. It's because we want to. That's how we have a more sustainable county. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, like I said, this is a very personal issue for me because I am constantly seeing videos on YouTube where people are, or TikTok, where you know people who are just graduating from either high school or college, they can't afford to find a place to live. Like rent is ridiculously expensive, which means that they can't put money away, you know, for retirement, let alone to buy a house, you know, because you have to have a down payment for a house. You know, so these issues affect everybody, not just, you know, for some reason people get it in their head, you know, oh, it's poor people that can't afford houses. No, when the average price of a house in Baltimore County, from what I remember hearing, now it changes all the time, I'm sure, but it's like $400,000 to $500,000. You can go on Zillow and see these numbers, and you know, people weren't spending $500,000 or $400,000 on a house even 15 years ago. You know, why did this happen? I know COVID with the lockdowns that, it, you know, things changed around that time period because of the mortgage rates going down. But it's like, this has not changed and people still think it's the year 2020. You know what I mean, Sharonda?
Absolutely. But you know what else? It's very simple. It's supply and demand.
Right.
Right. So if you don't have a housing supply, it's going to cost more. And I also want us to change the way we think about housing. Housing is, people say my housing is the price, the cost of my house is high, so you have to pay more taxes. We've always traditionally thought that the only way that you were going to build wealth is through your home. Sometimes it's just shelter, you know,
yep.
And all these theories, your house, your cost of the house is going to be devalued. They're simply theories, right? But we also should have a mentality where we have to change the way that we're doing our investments. Our home should not be our retirement plan. You know, it really is shelter. And I think that we are growing into a society that we don't care about anybody except ourselves until it happens to us. So, you know, even with aging infrastructure, we all, if we live long enough, we're probably going to get a disability. Like I have a split four-year home. If for some reason I'm unable to walk, I have to move somewhere else. Do I want to move out of my community? We have to have attainable housing, right? It can't just be one type of housing. It has to be apartments. It has to be townhomes. It has to be single family homes. We just have to think differently on what our future looks like.
I agree. And I mean, I would actually like to explore this topic with you more in maybe another podcast, not about your political campaign, because, you've been down in the trenches with this. I mean, this has been a large part of your career. It's something that you personally care about, I assume.
Yes.
You know, like more beyond just a job and a paycheck. I mean, you actually, you know, this is people's lives and, you know, homelessness and, like I said, people being able to comfortably retire and they can't do that because now they have a mortgage payment or, rent. I mean, I feel really bad for people who did buy a house that they really couldn't afford, but that was the only thing that was on the market. And now they may have to sell it at a loss, you know, and unfortunately that's just how it goes sometimes. And then, you know, I really think the banks are taking advantage of people too. and possibly even the real estate agents, but I'm not going to blame them because the homeowner at the end of the day sets the price. And like you said, we shouldn't be looking at houses as a retirement plan or an investment. It's shelter. But at the same time, I get why people want to be able to sell their house at a higher price, but if nobody can afford it, it's going to be stuck on the market for a while, and eventually that greed has to subside. And also, Sharonda, how do you feel about restricting real estate purchases to only actual human beings and not companies?
Well, that doesn't make any sense, and I don't know if that's even legal. Let me tell you why. We have to have actual people. So I'm not going to tell someone that you need to make different ways to have your retirement income. And it might be in real estate investment. So that doesn't make sense to me. So as a person who worked in real estate, you limit your liability by creating LLCs.
Okay.
Because anybody that hurts themselves on my property, I'm liable for it. So I'm not anti business. In fact, you know, my very best friend that's in Atlanta, she grew up poor. And so what she does is she has purchased new homes for people who seemingly are poor, have large families, and she rents it out.
Mm-hmm.
And she also does that, and she gets, they have a voucher. So I don't think that is a viable answer. Because if I'm thinking smart and I have, you know, and I'm able to, you know, if you're doing this as a business investment, it doesn't always have to be bad business. And you would create different LLCs, so you're not personally liable for each property that you own. So I don't think that is a viable answer. But I do believe in, yeah, but you know, there is something else too. There's other models for housing in different jurisdictions, and they're literally right here. Some have housing opportunities commissions where the housing opportunities commission is like the landlord for homes. And they would purchase homes that might be starter homes. So maybe they can be rented out or maybe sold. So, I mean, there's different avenues to kind of take care of that. And entities, government entities that own property, they can create laws where they have the first right of refusal. So you can keep people in your communities. And it's not like the Ticketmaster where all the people that want to make the prices really high will go ahead and purchase all the tickets. I mean, so there are ways to do it, but it has to be a long-term thought and a long-term investment.
Okay. Figured I'd float that one your way, because I hear a lot of people talk about that, how, you know, the Black Rocks and the Vanguards of the world are buying up all the properties. And then, you know, I don't know what the solution is. I'm not, like you said, it may even be unconstitutional to restrict companies from buying single family homes and even duplexes and whatnot. But like you said, it is a supply issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the NIMBYism, you know, unfortunately, there is a need for people to, I'll just put it like this, move out of their parents' house and be able to afford a house on their own. And, you know, I look at the salary ranges, the wage, whether it's a part-time job, full-time job, and there's a lot of people who still live with their parents because they just can't afford that price that their parents didn't have to pay for the property they currently live in. So it's like, I think your Ticketmaster analogy was perfect, actually.
Man, I can't get those Beyonce tickets until I get them soon as they come out.
So what was your bachelor's and your master's degrees in?
So I have a bachelor's degree from Morgan State University in political science, and I have a master's degree in public administration.
Okay, good. That's a good qualifications right there for anybody who doesn't know who Sharonda is.
Yeah.
And you said over 20 years with government related business?
Well, I've spent 20 years in Essex, but yeah. So let me just give you a little bit of my background. So I used to work for State Highway, where I was a real estate agent. So I would buy the right of way.
Oh, okay.
It's like some of the projects, like 43. you know, I helped buy some of that property back in the day. So you can have new roads. I've been very involved with, like, they had the Hampstead Bypass in Carroll County. So, you know, in that role, you did every facet of real estate. So I would purchase property. We would also sell the property. I mean, a lot of different transactions between the individual, and you work with developers. You work with landowners. You work with renters. I also had a opportunity to work in the law department. Similarly, I do now in general counsel. So I was the person that did all the deeds. You know, a lot of times the lawyers sign everything, but I did everything.
Right.
And you also would make, you know, land development agreements and things for state highway. And so that was under the office of the attorney general. Later on, I had, I've done some human services work for workforce development in the county. So one of the things that we are talking about right now, and it's very relevant, is that there is a, you know, I would help the welfare to work program was that it was a work requirement that if you were on, if you received cash assistance for more than 5 years, we try to get you to go to work, you know, and if you didn't, you know, comply with being in some type of training or getting a job, you know, they would cut off your cash assistance until such time you had to reapply. So I did that program in Baltimore County. So I would like spend one day like social services, but I did that through Humanum. And that also led me to do some vocational training for individuals in high school who had an IEP or a 504. They were in special education. So, you know, I started a program at Bayview, where I would mentor students, their half a day for the last quarter of their senior year. And then I would help get them jobs. I've also worked in a law firm doing title work. I've worked in real estate at the city of Baltimore. And then I was the ADA coordinator for the whole city. So that's a little bit of my background. So I have a lot of government experience. Just volunteering, you know, I've been a member of my sorority for 20 some years. So I've tried to do a little bit of everything between, you know, mental health awareness, mentoring young girls. I've also, because of my son, you know, I've been very instrumental in National Alliance of Mental Illness, as well as, you know, autism awareness and autism speaks and all those things. So that's just a little bit about background. That's probably more, but that's a little bit about me.
Well, if people want to find out more, can they go to your website and see?
Absolutely. Sharonda Huffman is Sharonda. And they used to joke around with me because I went over to SHA. They called me SHA Rhonda. So Sharonda Huffman, HUFFMAN.com.
Can you say that again? I think.
Yes. SharondaHuffman.com. SHARON as in Nancy, DA. Huffman, HUFF as in Frank, MAN.com.
Okay, so you had mentioned that you were involved with workforce development. Can you tell me some of the details of what you did?
Absolutely. So I was, I used to work for Humanum, and I'd worked with actually three different programs. One was in Howard County. At one point, I worked in Baltimore City. And so that's when I basically was the manager of some high school students. They went through a vigorous interview process. So in partnership with the school system and this is before COVID, DOORS, which is Division of Rehabilitative Services under the Department of Education, they received a stipend. So, you know, you can, like, let's say you don't have as many classes your senior year, so you could get credit for doing some kinds of work-related work study. So we had programs with local hospitals. So one year I was at Howard General Hospital, and then I actually started a partnership with Howard Community College. And so that following year, they actually had a program at Howard Community College that we had students at. But I also started the one at John Hopkins Bayview. So think about a hospital, right? They have so many different careers you could be in. So during our interview process, we asked people what they were interested in. And so we had people like who had learning disability, but they had some type of special education need. So we had people working in IT. You had people even working in shock trauma for people that were at University of Maryland. And they all got some type of skill for like 3 months and they had a work experience. I would actually stay at the hospital with them. Sometimes I would have to help train them to do the job. Once that experience was finished, then I will also look for a full-time or part-time job for them, depending on if they were going to school or what they wanted to do. So that was a great experience for me. And before that, I worked in Towson. They had a welfare to work program where individuals who were getting cash assistance were sent to me and for the East Side. And, you know, I would give them training. I would help them search for jobs. And so these were some of the hardest to place individuals because they have been on cash assistance for over 5 years. So in order to keep that cash assistance, they would have to make sure they reported to me and then I would help them get jobs. If they didn't report to me, then they would get dismissed from the program. They would have to reapply to get their cash assistance. So today I think about all the experiences that I had. Now I have been working closely with like the local Chamber of Commerce. And I think that is a great opportunity. We have all these Chamber of Commerces that have businesses. And like my son, he went as but my daughter does go there now. He was at Sawyer's Point. He did cybersecurity. There are so many students that need to have a work experience that we really could be working with some of their chambers of commerce to get them that work experience during the year. And so based upon some of the criteria, that is something I kind of want to work with the Chamber of Commerce is now as far as getting our students, instead of sitting out there, don't have anything to do in the summer. Hey, let me partner you with one of our local businesses so you can get a job. So it's something to add to your resume.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, that's one of the things I even tell people who say they want to go to college is that from where I stand, these places want more experience than they really care. I mean, degree matters. Yes. But if you just have that degree, but you don't have any relevant experience, it's going to be tough for you to get a job.
Yeah, exactly. It's very competitive. So just give you an example, like my son, he had worked at the middle school across the street. You know, he fixed the computers for his experience. Now, I also challenge people, if you don't want to go to college, you know, he had got a certification when he finished. But some people can go back to school and get certifications. Like my very best friend that I spoke of before, you know, she works in IT and she has hired people who have changed careers because they went through certification classes. Unfortunately, because, you know, his mama kind of knows a little bit of everything. you know, I was able to, I look at those, he wasn't sure what he wanted to do when he graduated from high school. And I looked at some like, okay, my best friend, she's in IT, she makes a lot of money. You know, what do you think about that? And so he did cybersecurity. And now he has a scholarship, a full scholarship at Morgan. And that's one of those careers that the, at least they do now, that the higher education, Maryland Higher Education Commission, they have scholarships for those type of careers. But that career doesn't have to be done that way. It can be done in another way. But, you know, it was a good experience. I think it's a good experience for him to go ahead and get his 4-year degree.
Well, I'm happy to hear all this is going on behind the scenes. So why did you decide to run for office?
It is so funny you said that. It's a kind of a long process. I knew nothing about a Democrat Central Committee. So one of my good friends that I worked with, she was running for the Democratic Central Committee in Baltimore City. So I started hanging out with her, door knocking, like they really take that seriously over in Baltimore City. And I've always been involved with politics. You see my major, I've always helped people. I have friends and sorority sisters who were very much engaged in politics. So I'm always going to help her. But then, you know, I start talking to her more and I start becoming more engaged. And I was like, well, let me look this up. So just so happens there was an opening for the Democratic Central Committee because the past chair of the Democratic Central Committee in Baltimore County, she had decided to run for council. So I had, for about 5 months or so, I was on the Central Committee. I applied for another term, for a four-year term, and for whatever reason, I didn't get it. I kind of know why, but I'm not going to put anybody under the bus. So you know what I did instead? You know what? I've always been a person like, I really love this stuff, right? I can really be engaged. I knew what it was. I was like, I love this. So I started my own Democratic club. So the very next month, I became an associate member. So through that club, the Blue and Gold Democratic Club, I started it in 2022. You know, I really felt there was a need, especially in East Baltimore County, to have more people engaged in politics.
Can you say the name of the club again?
Yeah, Blue and Gold Democratic Club. So we even have a website, Blue and Gold Dems. So I started that with my neighbor down the street who actually got on the Central Committee. And we have been integral in giving training to people who might want to run for office, to volunteer. We have done ethics days. We've actually given out scholarship to a high school student. And we even trained the Democratic Central Committee on Robert's Rules. And they were able to actually elect the new chair as a result of it. So I really have enjoyed my time, you know, on the club. So since then, I also started Emerge. Emerge is a national program for women to run for office because I set my eyes on, oh, I'm going to run this time and I'm going to win. I'm not even going to get appointed. But then, you know, when I was in the class, a lot of my, and now, let me tell you, I had the all-star class, okay? Sarah David was in my class, who's running for state's attorney for Baltimore County. I have a lot of people that will be coming out, running for office. And then it was like, you know, a lot of you was like, Sharonda, you probably need to run for something else. And then around the same time, they start talking about they're going to have additional districts. All along, I've been knocking, you know, knocking on doors and telling people to do four more. And then I was like, well, maybe it's meant for me for it to, you know, meant for it to be, because now they're talking about having a whole district. And on based upon that map, there was no one representing Essex. In addition to that, I also had decided that I was going to get elected to go to the DNC. So those are some of the factors as to why I decided to run for office. And I think one of the main factors is I felt like we don't have enough representation over in Essex. And I'm very passionate about housing. I was a part of the Inclusionary Housing Coalition in Baltimore City. And because of our advocacy, we were able to get an inclusionary housing law passed in 2024. And when I started looking at what was going on in the county, because I thought we were good, I recognized the county was probably a little bit worse off than the city. And that was another factor that went, you know, that propelled me to put myself out there and run for office.
Okay, sounds good. By the way, off the record, are we back on the record?
Yes.
Okay.
During the election season, because there has the people just believe the Democrats are not alive over here anymore, right? So I started sign waving, and we had got so much support. So we actually start sign waving like starting on No King's Day, June the 14th. We've been sign waving in Essex every single week, and now we're starting to sign wave in Dundalk. So you will see us in Dundalk the next special day. I think it's like the 17th or something. And we will be at Merritt and Wise. So we are going to be everywhere. And I'm going to put my campaign everywhere because I don't know where the lines are going to be, because I am in a place where I could be in a Dundalk district, a bigger Essex Middle River district, or this so-called BIPOC district that they've created. So I'm going to just start, you know, campaigning locally and just expand. But I'm going to be a little bit everywhere, because if I do get on council, I just don't want to represent exactly where I live. There are other communities that, like mine, they don't feel represented. So I guess I have the privilege that I can call many of the council people and tell them my issue, and they may have to address instead of my actual council person. So that's how I think government should be. I don't think you should just look at where we live. We need to look at the whole county.
Do you know when the redistricting is supposed to be finalized?
Oh my gosh, you asked such great questions. So on Tuesday, and let me tell you, I am very much involved with the redistricting. I am a member of the Fair Maps Coalition, and I've been working with the ACLU as well as some of our council people to try to design a fair map. And I also actually I'm probably one of the reasons why we're starting on this controversy, because I had advocated to members of the redistricting commission to have a BIPOC, Black Indigenous People of Color district in East Baltimore County. So on Tuesday will be the only testimony hearing for a public hearing for the council. There has been rumors that they're not going to approve the map because you need actually 5 members to vote on it. So technically the law that they put in place says you have to have it done by October. Now, if they come up with a map that is, let's say, does not appear legal, then the ACLU and its partners will sue. So that could really mean we might not even have a net till next year.
Oh,
that's the consequences of, you know, not, you know, trying to follow the law just to see what will happen.
Well, on that note, if you were to win, what would your day one priorities be?
So I am, one of the things I did tell you about, but I am a Robert's Rules of Order person. I have had the opportunity to work with various county local governments. And the first thing I would do is to modernize our government and the way we're doing business. Like, we have a very, very old system in order to look at our bills. If you look at Legistar, which the city uses, the county needs to upgrade some of our systems because we are way behind schedule. Housing is one of my main priorities. Like, I was just, you know, had a housing meeting today. And that would be my main priority. So we need to modernize our zoning and permitting process and approve better processes for transparency to expand inclusive housing and attainable housing. I think we also, you know, we've had locally 2 instances of domestic violence where there is actually a parent who is alleged to have, you know, killed their child. So, you know, there's 2 things that going on there. We need a better system that not necessarily the police, it could be the sheriff's office, can do better referrals to potentially, you know, get people out of the home. I think in one of the instances, we have vendors that we use for domestic violence, and the police officer just simply didn't know which one to call, you know, but there are systems in place, like in Howard County, where someone can be removed from the home and they can immediately be put somewhere. I don't believe in the sheriff can just determine unless there's real evidence who did what when, but we need to have that safe space. And then back to mental health, we need to make sure that we're working with our health department to make sure we have more resources available for mental and maternal health. And I said to some people before, in schools, you know, we teach our children 911. We also need to teach our children 988, because I believe if people just felt comfortable in calling someone, that can save lives. And, you know, just overall, I'm seeing a lot of backroom deals done. So I want to really strengthen some of our ethics laws and some of our human resources laws. Like, I feel like I've been a victim of politics. You know, I've had Republicans can call the library lobbyists to get my events canceled. We have to be in transparency and order. When I worked in the city, every time there was political season, you basically got a 2-3 page document talking about all the things you can do while you're at work. And I don't think Baltimore County has gotten that deep yet. And I'm a little concerned about, you know, anybody decides to run for office and the ramifications, because people just don't know, hey, there are certain things you're allowed to do. So those are some of my my top things. I have a whole bunch more that I, you know, that take longer times, but those are probably one of my top, let's say, 30, 90 day priorities.
Okay. Well, you touched on it a little bit and it's on your website. Can you tell the podcast audience where you land on public safety issues?
So I had the great experience of working in an office that did everything. I hate that they put the Office of Equity and Civil Rights, like whatever somebody else doesn't want to deal with, they used to put in that office in Baltimore City. So specifically, how do I feel about public safety? I believe that we have an emerging to be great police force. I support our officers, but I do recognize in any job, we have biases, and not everybody is going to be able to have the highest ethics and morals. I think sometimes people get put into a category like, oh, I hate the police. I don't hate the police. I have had great experiences with police, but I do recognize that people do have biases. And I'm going to give you an example. My son is 25 years old. He is 6 feet tall. They weigh almost 300 pounds, right? And seemingly, right, you don't know he has autism. So one of my jobs as an ADA coordinator in the city was I had to go over the training some of our police officers need to have to recognize people who might have cognitive or mental health disabilities and way you should react with them. It shouldn't just be one or two people know how to do it. Too often, we're finding that maybe some lives could have been saved when there's a police interaction if there was better training. Now, I can't necessarily, you know, if someone has a gun or something, I understand.
Right.
But I recognize there has to be a training component, and that's at every single job. I also recognize that the police officers
Sorry, you're making me think of a recent incident, which I'm not going to be specific about it just to protect the person. But it was an incident where I don't know if the 911 dispatcher was told that the person had any issues. And you said it perfectly right there, which is, you know, if somebody has some kind of mental health issue, they need to be addressed in a different way than you would your, you know, average person that you're going to go try to arrest or whatever. You know, if you're just there for a wellness check, I think the police officer should tell the person, hey, I'm not here to arrest you, you know?
Yeah. So let me just say this. So there was a new law that just passed and I have been advocating that for years. So I can't remember if it's effective July the 1st, but I can go to the motor vehicle and they can now put on my son's license that he has a developmental disability.
Oh, I like that idea.
Yeah. So that's what I'm, so, you know, before some of the advocates was like, oh, they're going to get, what is the, you know, they're going to think of them differently. Well, you can tell my son has autism after you talk to him for a minute, right?
Yeah.
And so, but I'm saying everybody needs to have that basic training. And so that's what I do as a ADA manager. I give people training, right? And people don't know what they don't know. But I also think some of this, like some of these domestic violence issues, I kind of agree with Clyde Boatwright. We have, the police are asked to do so many things. I think that might be a task that you have more of a force on our sheriff's department, you know, that deals with some of those domestic violence issues and have more social workers engaged. And also it's an education thing. I can look at someone after a while and see, okay, there may be something else going on there, right? And so it's having that level of discernment that not everybody gets because I deal with so many people with disabilities. And so that's something that's part of training. You know, that's something you learn at the academy. That's something that's ongoing. And I don't think our police officers get all of that. And it's hard to make those, you know, split second decisions. That's why I'm not an officer. I got to think out things before I react. So, and they don't always have that opportunity. But I think there are great trainers that I have been in training with. And it's all about making sure we give all of our officers the right resources. And that also goes back to housing. You know, I want, you know, to have incentives. Like when my husband and I got our first home, to live near where you work. You know, so you get to know your community. You might know Roger down the street has autism because you lived in the neighborhood. So those are my type of things that I think we should look at the police force about.
So I'm going to wrap this up with the last two simple questions. And that is, why do you believe people should vote for you?
Well, I hope people will vote for me because I am genuine. I think too often we're looking at what we want to hear, but I want to tell you the absolute truth of it all. I'm not necessarily a politician, but I am an activist. I'm very concerned about, you know, what's going on in our communities, including our schools. Now, I do recognize that I'm running for council. I'm not running for school board. So I do know my limitations. With my vast experience in different levels of government, I have a lot of different connections. So what I don't know, I know how to ask. I think what we also think is a benefit is that I just don't know Baltimore County. I've worked in Baltimore City. I've worked in the DMV. I've worked across the whole state. You know, I know there's, you know, housing issues in Eastern Shore. I know about the housing issues in Howard County. I also know the best practices because when I learn something, I try to go to different states and see how they're doing it. So what I want to do is I just don't want to be the community leader that knows how to pick up your trash because DPWT didn't. I want to be the person to resolve why didn't they get your trash? You know, like, what are the bigger issues? I'm a root cause person. And I think we might be lacking a lot of that. I don't want to be a Band-Aid fixer. I want to peel off the Band-Aid and really fix some of these problems. And if that means that sometimes somebody's not going to like it, I'm okay with that. One thing that I didn't touch on is I am doing public financing. What does that mean? I don't want anyone to feel like, oh, she is about housing, so she must be in, you know, they must gave her money from a developer. No, that's not it at all. I see the real problems that's going on in the county, and a lot of it has to do with housing and our economic development. A lot of it has to do with, you know, we have a lot of working people who just don't have time to be delving into all these basic issues. They're just trying to survive. Mm-hmm. With everything changing in our federal government, we have to have backup plans to be more self-sufficient. So that's why I want people to run for me. I am a mom. I'm a military wife. My husband was in the military. I have adults with disability. I'm in the sandwich generation. You know, I'm also, you know, helping my mom out who is elderly and has a disability. I think for so long, we are just forgetting about all these people that are not seniors who have disabilities. We need better sidewalks. We need to have not walkable trails, but need to have things that are available for everyone who has a mobility. And I think I can bring that to the council, and that's what they're lacking, as well as better governance.
Okay. Is there anything else that I might have missed that you'd like to tell the audience?
Well, you know, redistricting is very important, and we have never had a Black woman on the council. Right now, we don't even have any women. And so a lot of people are going to try to say this narrative that, oh, our communities need to stay together. Communities aren't going anywhere. If you look at what's really happening, we're going to basically have a whole new council. So a lot of things that people are saying are just propaganda because they don't want me to have a seat at the table. I'm already recognizing a lot of things that are not right. And I think if you're looking to change the status quo, you're not going to be looking for someone like me. I have a lot of knowledge on a lot of these different issues, and I've already seen how we can make changes, but I think people are just used to doing the same thing over and over again. But we definitely do need redistricting so people have better chances to even win. So that's the last thing I want to say.
All right. Well, how can people get in touch with you? What's your website? And all that good stuff.
Well, my website is, SharondaHuffman.com. And my email address is Sharonda, Sharonda, at SharondaHuffman.com. My phone number is 443-579-7910. And I have all the social media tags at the bottom of my website.
All right. Well, thank you again so much for joining us at the Baltimore County Informer podcast. Check out Sharonda's website, like she just said. And I'll let you have the last word, Sharonda.
Well, it has been an absolute pleasure. Since I am doing campaign financing, I've been a little scared to collect as much money, but keep checking back my website, and I'm going to be having new links. I did have a couple of fundraisers, but, you know, this is a campaign that is for the people and by the people. So, you know, if you love my message, please contact me and, you know, let's get together. I'm also doing sine waves. East Baltimore County is not used to having a whole bunch of Democrats out here waving signs, talking about, you know, save our democracy. So, you know, email me and come and hang out with me. Thanks.